Okay, welcome back. And dive in. Last time we finished up our discussion of this synchronous buck converter. We went through, looked at the time domain operation, normalized that into a complete state plane description of this synchronous buck. Found that there were two resonant intervals, intervals 2 and 4, two non-resonant intervals, intervals 1 and 3. And we went through and analyzed mathematically the state plane relationships and time domain relationships of the converter. So in our non-resonant intervals, we basically just looked at the time domain waveforms and normalized them to get them in a consistent format with our state plane analysis. For example, in interval 1, just look at the total change in inductor current due to the voltage impressed upon it, normalize that to get an equation in terms of M's, J's, and angles. Again, those angles are not significant on the state plane, just a fact of the matter with what the units are here when we normalize. The resonant intervals were a little more interesting. There we could get some insight off of the state plane, and for each resonant interval we got a pair of equations, one relating the radii at the beginning and end, and one describing the angle swept out by that circular arc during the resonant interval. So the same thing for intervals 3 and 4. And then we had completely solved all of the individual subintervals. The only thing left to do was to bring them together in some way, and say how the combination of those four subintervals dictates what the overall behavior of the converter is. In this synchronous buck converter, what we did is really just average the output current. And averaging the output current really was averaging the inductor current, which is to say we did the same thing we would have done in a CCM 481 type implementation and applied cap charge balance, right? Got that by saying, okay, the average current in this capacitor C out over one period has to be 0. So the inductor current is equal to the output current. Find that to be kind of a general step we can take in any of these state plane analysis of converters with significant resonance in them. We can apply these sort of balancing and averaging equations to any of our filter elements, like C out, we assumed was large enough that its voltage remains constant. We took that final step, went through and averaged the output current, the normalized domain that gave us some equation for J out. And then the last equation to add to our equation set was just relating the four periods to the total, or the four interval durations to the total period length. Equation that just says the sum of the four period times is equal to the switching period. With that, we were left with 8 equations, 8 unknowns, and some system of equations that we can solve and get a solution for any given operating point. We showed some examples in MATLAB of solving through in different ways. And these are generally transcendental equations because we have some combination of polynomial algebraic terms and some trig terms. So most often we can't solve this in closed form. Just say J out is equal to this, F is equal to this. Instead, we have to use some sort of iterative or numerical type solution approach. It can either be taking a guess or sweeping a couple of the variables, or we can plug it into some solver based on error minimization and optimization type function. Okay. But either way, that gives us enough to be able to solve through the complete behavior of the converter. And now, even when we have these highly resonant intervals where we can't apply small ripple approximation to some of these passive elements, we can go through and solve the steady state of the converter. So today, and probably for the next class, we're going to look at a second example. I'm going to focus on this CCM flyback. So a simple flyback converter, like you've all seen many times before. Flyback is widely used in low power, high step down applications. So a lot of 5 and 10 watt USB chargers that plug into the wall, the internals of that will just be a flyback. It's about the simplest topology you can use to get a transformer in there and help you with having a large step-down conversion ratio. So you want to go from 170 volts peak off of the AC line down to 5 volts, 10 volts, 12 volts at relatively low power. This is kind of the smallest and cheapest way to do that. So the flyback is heavily used in those types of applications. We don't see it used much at significantly higher power. And the reasons we'll be able to look at now, analyzing some resonance that occurs when we incorporate the behavior of this leakage inductance of the transformer LL. So before we look at what happens with that, let's just kind of review the basic ideal CCM flyback. So we'll first look at ideal operation, which would be no parasitics, LL is equal to zero, CDS of the MOSFET is equal to zero, everything perfectly ideal. And we'll assume both LM and C at the output here are sufficiently large that our small ripple approximations apply. It's just a typical CCM flyback. So over one switching period, zero to TS, DTS somewhere here in the middle, I want to look at, say, VDS, IM, and IDS, which is equal to IL, this current here. But at the moment, we have no leakage inductance. So this inductor is gone, it's zero. Okay. So our ideal CCM flyback, during DTS, the MOSFET's on, it'll keep VDS at zero. The MOSFET shuts off, the diode turns on, which causes our voltage to jump up. Value that it jumps up to, when the MOSFET shuts off, it blocks VG, but when the diode is on, it additionally blocks this output voltage reflecting back through the transformer. So as it reflects through this inverting transformer, it'll flip. So when the diode is on, we'll end up with, let's call this VP. Is just V over N reflected back through the transformer and in the polarity I've shown here from it flipping through the inverting transformer. So if we go through the loop here, we'll have VG plus V over N. This inductor is gone. That's what this device has to block. So that's our VDS. The magnetizing current IM, if LM is large, should be small ripple, well approximated by some capital IM, and it'll have a triangular ripple around it, ramp up when the MOSFET is on and we're applying VG volts across it, and then ramp down, we apply minus V over N across it. And then IDS down here, when the MOSFET is on, it'll take the magnetizing current. Diode's off, so it has nowhere to go. Nowhere else to go. It should be just a copy of the magnetizing current. And then when the MOSFET is off, that current will all circulate through the transformer and go out through the diode, so the current in the MOSFET will drop down to zero. So that's our ideal flyback operation. And now let's begin talking about non-ideal, where we have LL greater than zero, some leakage inductance in the circuit, and some CDS capacitance of our MOSFET. So the start of the interval is going to remain the same up to this point here. Everything follows the same trajectory. But then big problems start to occur right after this first shut off of the MOSFET. Obviously, this is not going to happen anymore with this sizable, significant inductance LL in series with the MOSFET. Its current isn't going to be able to just purely jump vertically like this. We would need to somehow generate an infinite voltage to get the current through that inductor to change instantaneously. So instead, what's going to happen? Well, when we shut off the MOSFET initially, this voltage is also not going to change instantaneously. So the diode is not going to turn on instantaneously. Instead, what we're going to be left with is the magnetizing current flowing down through LL and into CDS to bring up that VDS voltage. And it's just going to continue being charged by LM until it gets to a high enough value to allow the diode to turn on. Okay. So let's sketch some equivalent circuits here. During this time, this interval, we really have nothing interesting going on. VG at the input. Then we have LM, LL, and a short. And then the current just ramping up. I will make one very reasonable approximation, say that LL is much less than LM. So the leakage inductance of this transformer is much less than the magnetizing inductance. If we do a good job designing the transformer, we should be able to enforce that to be true. The magnetizing inductance we're using as an energy storage element in the flyback, the leakage inductance is just a parasitic, something we would like to minimize. So if we do a good job designing it, this should be true, which means that LM plus LL is approximately just LM. So here we can say, even though we now have two inductors in series, it really just looks like LM and this interval is unchanged. Okay. Then when we shut off the MOSFET, there'll be some brief period here where basically have the same thing, but instead of the MOSFET being a short, it's going to be modeled by its CDS capacitance. But since this interval is short, LM is much larger than LL, the current is not going to change much. We're allowing small ripple approximation to be applied on LM. So we're going to say during this interval, this looks about like just a constant current charging CDS. That's because LM is so large and this interval should be relatively short compared to the overall period, that we don't think its current is going to change much. So we can approximate it as just a constant current source. If we do that, see what's going to happen in the waveforms. Well, EDS is going to rise, the constant slope of IM over CDS. Be a little more accurate here if we use, instead of the average IM, use this peak value. Some minor difference here. And it's going to rise up until the point where it hits VG plus V over N. Once it gets up there, then the diode can turn on. The diode is no longer having a reverse voltage across it, keeping it reverse biased. And more or less, these two currents are going to stay kind of the same. It may decrease somewhat, but relatively insignificant amount, more or less hold constant during this whole interval. Okay. Then once the diode turns on, which will happen here. Okay. I'll call it, I'll go back to calling this Q to not interfere with our M variables for normalized conversion ratios, normalized voltages. So after the diode turns off, we get a new equivalent circuit. After the diode turns on, where we've got our nearly constant magnetizing current, our MOSFET still off. But by turning on, the diode is going to clamp our output capacitance, which again, as a large filter element, we can approximate it as being a constant voltage. Reflecting it through the transformer just during this interval, what we'll end up with is a voltage source here that looks like V over N, reflected back through the transformer. Oops, I missed an important part. So The important part is that that's going to clamp. It's going to be reflected here, and it'll essentially short out the magnetizing inductance in terms of the current flow, because this will be a nearly zero impedance source. All of the magnetizing current is just going to circulate in this loop, going straight to the output. But since LL is outside of the extents of that transformer, it'll come after this voltage connection. And if we simplify the circuit a little bit, saying, okay, we know IM is going to the output. What I'm really looking at is what's the behavior of these two resonant elements. I can say, looks like just a source that is the series combination of VG plus V over N, VG plus V over N, around to our LL CDS. Right here is IL, voltage here, VDS. And we end up with a resonant circuit, series connection of LL and CDS, and this is now going to ring out and progress according to our state plane. So go through and analyze that to push this on the state plane and see exactly what's going to happen. We want to solve for things like the DC operating point and initial condition of the circuit. So in kind of MDS JL, let's just do it in non-normalized parameters for the moment. VDS IL, DC operating point of the circuit, in order for it to sit and not have any sort of DVDT, DIDT, what we would need is this VG plus V over N to show up on the capacitor, zero current in the inductor. So our DC point is VG plus V over N, zero current in the inductor. Initial condition right at the beginning of this interval, voltage VDS just hit VG plus V over N to get the diode to turn on, and the current IL is at IM. As we plot the state plane, we'll also want to know the initial condition on the derivatives. Initial condition on the derivatives here, the voltage on the capacitor will be increasing, current will be flat, right? So from our initial condition, we have VG plus V over N on the capacitor, VG plus V over N on this source, which means we have zero voltage across the inductor. So its current isn't changing right at that initial moment. But we have some positive current IM going through the inductor, flowing down into the capacitor, which means its voltage will be increasing initially. So initial condition on D by DT is capacitor voltage increasing, inductor current not changing. Help us plot out the state plane. So before we go and sketch the state plane, what do we expect to happen? Okay, from this point on our IL VDS curves, we're initially having a bunch of current flowing to CDS, and it's going to cause the voltage to increase, and we're going to ring out centered around this VG plus V over N, which was our ideal solution. So we expect to see some sort of ringing. Not super well drawn there. That is centered around this VG plus V over N. Should still come a little bit. Goes initially upwards to some increased value. For our IL, we initially have IM, we're centered around zero, so we expect to see the current bring down and go as negative as minus IM, something like this. During that whole time, IM is just circulating through to the output, so it'll keep more or less its same trajectory as in the ideal case. So we'll analyze in a moment, but this looks like it could be a problem. We are increasing the voltage stress of VDS significantly, which means we're going to need a higher voltage MOSFET that can tolerate that higher peak without getting damaged or going in any kind of avalanche mode, which may be an issue. Also, this period is our D prime TS period. We now have a resonance, a significant resonance that is existing not just during one of the switching times like we had in the synchronous buck, but actually during an entire switch conduction time. The entire time the diode's on, this ringing is going on. Because we might not be doing some kind of fractional quarter of a period of a sinusoid like we got in the synchronous buck. Instead, we might be doing 10, 20 periods of this ringing. So, looks like we may have some issues associated with this. We'll go through and analyze them. Okay. So if I replot these waveforms, I'm going to focus on VDS and IL, plot them on the MDS-JL state plane axes. I'm going to normalize according to V base is VG plus V over N, because that was my initial condition and my DC operating point. So it looks like a thing that'll be convenient to normalize out. And then I base is equal to V base over R naught, with R naught is square root LL over CDS. So my waveforms again, VDS started low, ramped up with a constant slope of IM over CDS, and then proceeded to ring out. IL, more or less constant. I'll go ahead and draw it as such here. It's the constant IM until this point, which time it began to ring out. Manner that looked something like this. So let's go ahead and plot. I'm going to label these intervals 1, 2, and 3 just so that I can show their correspondence on the state plane. So I'm going to put my center during this resonance here at M is equal to 1. So my DC operating point was VG plus V over N form of voltage, zero current. If I normalize that according to V base is VG plus V over N, I'll get M is equal to 1, J is equal to 0. My initial condition will be directly above it and at some normalized current associated with IM. So I'm going to put that here, call this JM, IM over I base. I've got my DC up point. My initial condition, and my initial condition on the derivatives stated that my voltage is increasing and my current is flat, which means I'm going this way. So just starting from the beginning of the period, where are we at this time? T is equal to 0. I've got 0 voltage and JM current. So this point right here is interval 1 on the state plane, because neither VDS or IL are changing. This whole interval corresponds to just sitting at this point on the state plane. We go into interval 2, my JL will stay constant. MDS is going to ramp up from 0 to 1. So that's this segment here. And then we go into interval 3, which is defined by this radius. And we ring around this circle. I put a guide on here for in this direction. Okay. So that's our state plane for this portion of operation. This whole interval three ends sometime out here whenever we turn Q on our MOSFET. Be the end of this interval three. So just kind of practically some discussion here. If we're worried about things like the capacitive switching loss associated with shorting out CDS, we have some in the way I've drawn it, no matter where we are, but there are some points that are better than others. I mentioned these points previously when we talked about the DCM buck converter. These are called valley switching points. There are points where the voltage on CDS is the minimum during this interval three. If we turn on at those times, we'll get the minimum possible loss associated with shorting out CDS. Still non-zero in how I've drawn it. We had a little bit more initial current and might be able to get it all the way down to zero. But switching at these points will result in a little bit lower turn on loss for the MOSFET than, for example, switching somewhere here. Because I've drawn it right here, if we turn on the MOSFET at this point, that's pretty close to a valley switching point. It should be the minimum turn on loss of the MOSFET we can achieve in this operation. Now, that's obviously constrained because that's saying I'm changing my duty cycle of the converter. And is that the duty cycle I need to regulate the output voltage? Well, depends on the operating point. Like I said, this is not some switching dead time. This is the full diode conduction interval. So we do expect to see that we're going through a few or many periods of this resonance. If the resonance is very high frequency with respect to the length of this interval, we will see significant damping effects. So here, our equivalent circuit during this resonance was Vg plus V over N, LL CDS. If we consider the impact of some resistance in this loop, really be dominated by probably the winding resistance of the transformer. Since this is all current that's going through the entire transformer, the resistance of that primary plus any other parasitics in the loop. Consider the impact of that, even if that resistance is relatively small, but we go through a lot of periods of this resonance. It's a relatively high quality factor. As we go through many periods, we're going to see significant damping. And then what we would see is this resonance dying out over the length of this period we talked about before. My drawing is not so great on the state plane. What we'd see is a decreasing R3, spiraling in, and eventually steadying out at the DC operating point. If we have significant damping, then this idea of trying to hit these valley switching points is rather moot. If we're somewhere out here after all this resonance is damped out, no switching time is any better than any other. We're going to have full Vg plus V over N voltage on the capacitor. Okay. So there's some bad stuff happening here. Let's look at a couple of things in some detail. First thing we might want to look at is, okay, what is this point? What is the peak voltage stress that we're going to see on the MOSFET as a result of this leakage inductance ringing out? It's something greater than Vg plus V over N, greater than the worst case stresses of the MOSFET in our ideal converter. So we better know what those are as we're selecting a MOSFET and make sure we can design to accommodate it. Okay. So we can solve what this is relatively easily. MDS peak is just going to be 1 plus the radius in our ideal case. If we are significantly damped, it'll be a little bit of an overestimate. since we're only going through a quarter of a resonance to get there. Unless we are very, very heavily damped, it'll be a pretty good approximation. So say on the state plane, our MDS peak is just equal to 1 plus this R3. And R3 is, because we're right above the DC operating point, just JM. So our worst case normalized voltage stress is going to be 1 plus JM. We can denormalize that by multiplying both sides by V base. We'll get as VDS peak is equal to 1 when we denormalize it, just gives us back V base, VG plus V over N, plus JM. JM is IM over I base, where I base is VG plus V over N times R naught. So if we multiply by VG plus V over N, what we're left with is IM R naught as we denormalize this. And this will be now our denormalized expression for what the peak voltage is. How bad is this? Well, it really depends on the design and what all these parameters are. So let's look at some example design. This example is by no means optimal or the best you could possibly do, but it is a reasonable design for a converter going from 400 volts to 10 volts. The flyback, we'll say for an output power of 100 watts and a switching frequency of 1 megahertz. Using a turns ratio of 1 over 40, try to let the transformer do all the work of jumping down from 400 to 10 volts. The turns ratios match the conversion ratio. We end up operating with a duty cycle of 0.5. The flyback, buck boost derived, so having D is equal to 0.5 means the actual non-transformer associated conversion ratio is unity. Okay, so that's our design. I'm gonna pick some components here. I'm gonna say CDS is 100 picofarads. LM is 1.8 millihenries. LL is 35 microhenries. Which is 2% of LM of industrial transformer design for applications like this. They might kind of characterize them by the percent ratio between the leakage inductance and magnetizing on the order of 1 to 2% is generally a pretty good design. It's a well-coupled transformer. And with these numbers, R naught is root L over LL over CDS is 600 ohms. Really small capacitance and somewhat sizable leakage inductance because of the large magnetizing inductance. We want the large magnetizing inductance in order to have a small ripple CCM type flyback, but leakage inductance is going to scale with it. So we've got a lot of turns or big coils. There will be some significant leakage. So that's our design. If we go through and compute just CCM flyback, steady state operation, IM is NI out over D prime is 500 milliamps. Our average value for the magnetizing current, V base, VG plus V over N equal to 800 volts in this case. Then our VDS peak, this equation is going to be that 800 volts plus 500 milliamps times 600 ohms, R naught, equal to 1.1 kilovolts, which is a lot for a 100 watt converter from 400 volts down to 10 volts. So we end up with a huge overvoltage and we're having to use a 1.2 kV device or something where the input is 400 volts, relatively low power. And that's with a pretty good transformer, 2% leakage to magnetizing ratio. So this is a significant issue. It's going to cause us to either blow up some low voltage devices or have to pay a lot of money to have a very high voltage device in a not so high voltage application. So big issue, part of the reason why people don't often use flybacks at higher power levels, or if they do, it requires some circuit design effort. So as we go up in current, up in power, this overvoltage becomes more significant. Additionally, kind of hidden in here, this is designed in a nice way that reduces conduction losses by forcing the transformer to do all of the work of the conversion ratio. But doing so gives us a kind of higher starting point on our initial voltage, maybe drop turns ratio some so that we can get a lower just VG plus V over N in this design. As a result, we'll pay some penalty in conduction losses. Okay. So maybe push this a little bit further if this was a big problem, but the point is flybacks can have trouble in this type of application. The other thing I want to look at is what is the loss associated with this type of operation. And for the moment, what I'm going to assume is that we're looking at the damped case. I.e. the ringing dies out before Q turns on. Say that whatever sort of parasitic resistance we had, conduction times and resonant frequencies, this ringing dies out and becomes more or less just constant at the DC operating point before we turn Q1 on. Okay. So if that's true, then we can look at how much energy was lost in that ringing process. It's like I've argued before, not so useful to compute any characteristics of the spiral, but if I just want to know how much energy was lost in the process of spiraling down, say, okay, the energy removed from the resonant circuit is the difference between the energy it had at the initial condition and the energy stored by these two elements, L and C, at the DC operating point where it damps down and converges to. So at the initial condition, I have some voltage on the capacitor and some current in the inductor. At the DC operating point, I have some voltage on the capacitor, but zero current in the inductor, so I'll have lost the difference in energy of those two elements in this process of ringing out. Okay. So from state plane interpretation, the beginning of this period, I have 1/2 CdS Vg plus V over N squared, energy stored in the capacitor. I have 1/2 LL I M squared current in the inductor. At the end of the period, the end of this D prime TS period, I have zero current in the inductor and the same thing in the capacitor, same voltage on it. So energy that left this resonance between LL and CdS is 1/2 LM IM squared. Oops, LL, excuse me. Okay. I'm gonna put in a note here. Careful when you're using this type of energy-based analysis off the state plane. What we really know is that this is the energy that left resonance between L and C, went somewhere else in the circuit. We don't know for sure, just looking at the state plane, that that is loss. Could be in our circuit here that a significant amount of that energy actually went back to this source, this VG plus V over N source. Because of how this whole thing is centered around VG plus V over N, we can actually conclude that no average energy, as we go through many periods, goes into VG plus V over N. Its current is just going to be a zero average sinusoid. No energy went there, and any energy that leaves the resonance is dissipated on RW. But that's not generally the case. We have a source that isn't exactly our DC operating point. Some of the energy will just go elsewhere, may not be lost. Right? I'll actually see a case in a moment when we design different circuits around this flyback to limit this effect. So in this case, it is all loss, but need to verify that. Okay. So if I plug in the numbers from the previous slide, so energy lost is 4.4 microjoules. So the energy stored in the inductor when we shut off, and it all gets lost if we assume everything damps out. At 1 megahertz, this gives us a P loss just associated with this ringing damping out of 4.4 watts, which is pretty significant in a 100-watt converter. 4.4% drop in efficiency. So also quite a significant loss mechanism, may be dominant depending on the design. So considering the additional loss caused by this leakage inductance and the additional voltage stress, both reasons why the flyback's kind of limited to low power applications where we can tolerate both of these things because the current's relatively low. We start to go up higher in power, we need to find some way to limit the voltage stresses. We want to go up a little bit higher, we need to find some way to limit the loss associated with everything that's going on here. This is all not to mention that then at the end of this period, when I turn Q1 on, I'm shorting out CDS still, have some switching loss associated with that, conduction loss, everything else in the circuit. So first we'll talk about limiting this overvoltage stress. There are a few different ways to implement clamping circuits in the flyback that prevent the voltage stress from getting so high. It can be designed to limit the voltage stress in a reasonable range. The basic idea behind them is just to put something that looks kind of like this into the circuit. Some diode and some source that if VDS tries to go up above some clamping value VS, the diode turns on and it'll keep it there. So then VDS is constrained below VS. Okay. We'll talk in a couple slides about how to actually implement this. We're not going to use some external source. We use something like a Zener diode and can put it in a few different places. But generally, the idea is the same. We're trying to put some clamping circuit that will prevent our VDS from going excessively high. Okay. VS needs to be designed such that it is greater than VG plus V over N. If you try to put VS anywhere less than VG plus V over N, it's just going to destroy the operation of the flyback. We need to, at minimum, make sure kind of our ideal waveform can go through the converter without turning on that diode so that our ideal operation is still the same. We'll clamp somewhere up above this VG plus V over N level to limit the additional overvoltage from this resonance, but still allow the ideal off-state stresses. Okay. So put VG plus V over N less than or equal to VS, it's less than or equal to what we found as the peak stresses in the previous slide from the unclamped case. So not really a necessity, but there's no point in adding this circuit if we're not going to reduce the overvoltage, actually clamp at something less than what the voltage is going to ring up to. Okay. VS is somewhere in between those two cases. What that's going to do, the diode will turn on and cut off whenever the voltage tries to go higher than that. Skip drawing anything here and just draw the waveforms on the next slide. So we've got VDS and IL. This is time. So initial part of the period is going to look the same. VDS will be zero when the MOSFET is on. Then when it shuts off, it'll ramp up to this VG plus V over N. Turn the diode on and begin resonating. And things are only going to start to change once this VDS voltage hits VS. Same thing here. This is same period 1, 2, and 3. See the beginnings of some resonance. And then the only thing I'll change will be here. Here we only went 1, 2, 3, so I can uniquely define 4. Once this portion of the resonance that we saw in the previous analysis causes the voltage to go up to VS instead of continuing on, it'll turn on this DS diode and clamp the voltage there. Means during this time, once that DS diode turns on, our circuit looks like we had this resonance in 3. As we turn on the diode and clamp VS across our MOSFET, what we're left with, well, the voltage gets clamped, so we don't have to worry about what this capacitor is doing. It's staying constant. And we've just got a constant voltage applied across our leakage inductance. Voltage is VG plus V over N minus VS. It's going to cause the leakage inductance current to ramp down until it hits zero and the diode shuts off. Slope VG plus V over N minus VS over LL. That is less than zero because VS is designed to be greater than VG plus V over N, like I mentioned. So, diode stays clamped. We have this circuit until the current reaches zero. Once the current reaches zero, we won't keep DS on anymore. So we have this IL current while the diode is on flowing in this direction. Once that hits zero and tries to reverse, DS will block it and the clamp will drop out of the circuit. What we'll be left with is back where we started, same VG plus V over N, LL CDS circuit. Same thing that we had in interval 3. Difference is going to be, now we have a different initial condition. Okay. Same DC operating point, same circuit, but different initial condition, which will give us a smaller radius in our ringing. Okay. Instead of having this large current biasing it, we're now turning on with zero current biasing the circuit, and we'll have some constrained ringing here. We plot that J sub L MDS. First few periods are going to look the same. J sub M. One will again sit at this point. Two brings us out to here. In interval 3, resonate some distance here on this larger radius. But once the voltage reaches, we'll call M sub S, normalized VS, normalized clamping voltage. The diode turns on, and we go into interval four. In interval four, voltage stays clamped to VS, current ramps down to zero. And at the end of that, we go back to our resonant circuit. Our center is still here at M is equal to one, but we've now got some interval five, R5, where we ring out now with some smaller radius, R5. The result, instead of going, oops, wrong way, all the way out here to this peak voltage, we instead constrain it somewhere by design, wherever we put VS in between one and our old peak. Constrain everything in there instead of continuing out to what would have been our old MDS peak. So we've limited the ringing, we've limited the peak over voltage, but we're fine. We've caused some additional losses through sending energy out to this VS source, and the amount of additional losses depend on how we implement that. We'll look at implementations of clamping circuits next class, as well as some more complex operation of the flybacks, more complex clamping circuits that allow a sizable reduction in losses associated with this. And so we'll pick up there next time. Thanks, everyone. Stop the recording.